think that this is a historically critical discussion that we are engaged in, which has very profound effects for physical and mental health in this country and throughout the world. Because when you're talking about public health interventions, I usually tell my students you need to think about units. And the units we're talking about here in crops and oils are in, you know, hundreds of thousands of metric tons. And this is a different unit than a unit of behavior. This is a different unit than a unit of dollars. This is the physical substances which we're consuming as a society, which are making up our brains and our bodies. I'm particularly interested in the brain and interested in the role of essential fatty acids in brain function, because for us to exist and for you to hear me, you must have a brain made of lipids. It's the basic substance of our existence, of our emotional and perceptual existence, is an organ which is composed of lipids. And many of these lipids are, many of the critical ones, such as DHA, comprise about 14% of the whole mass of the brain, and those lipids are only available from our diet. So what you choose to eat and what history and farm bills impel you to eat determine the composition of your brain and perhaps a little bit of who you are. So I initiated work in this area by generating a hypothesis in 1995, and I'm happy to say that I think we've met all but the blue criteria for the hierarchy of clinical efficacy in evidence-based medicine. Clearly, there's epidemiological associations, which I'll show you some of today, since I was requested to give an overview. I'll skip direct case-based observational studies. We won't go into the delightful explanation of mechanisms of open trials. I'll describe some of the randomized trials and skip right to the meta-analysis produced by the American Psychiatric Association in its issuance of treatment recommendations. Now, this was the first meta-analysis, and now there's been four meta-analyses of trials which all basically conclude the same thing. And that is, in this horribly presented slide, that here are the studies, Maringel, Pete, etc. They don't have the numbers of subjects. Here is the median line of zero with the median and the confidence interval favoring placebo or favoring omega-3 fatty acids. And here is the summary in diamond about an effect size of about 0.54, which is sort of roughly equivalent to, you know, a better than 50% reduction in depressive symptoms, and quite statistically significant. And in comparison, most of the meta-analyses of antidepressant trials come in at an effect size of about 0.2. So simply restoring the brain to nutritional adequacy appears to have a greater treatment effect than commonly used antidepressants. Now, why isn't this widely known and replicated and used amongst the psychiatric community? And that's very simply because there's a lot of money to advertise drugs, and there is very little money to advertise omega-3s in foods. So one of the critical questions, not only for mental health but for this broad perspective, is how much EPA and DHA, these omega-3 essential fatty acids, should you eat every day? So I've tried to make my estimation of the calculation of daily intakes based on recommended daily allowance intakes. So here's the criteria by the National Academy of Sciences Institute of Medicine, that it an RDA is the average daily dietary nutrient to meet the nutrient requirement of nearly all, 78% of the population. So you need a pathological condition that results from a nutrient deficiency. So take another issue of seafood, iodine. If you become iodine deficient, you not only become hypothyroid, you have mental disturbances, depression, you have cardiovascular disturbances, you have nutrient disturbances which affect nearly every organ system. I think thus is the case with omega-3 fatty acid deficiencies. But you've got to link it to a disease outcome and a risk of that disease outcome. I think when you talk about 98% of populations, you need to really look at the world's diversity of populations and the world's diversity of nutrient intake. So here I'll use ecological data because that gives me worldviews, and we'll consider tissue compositions and we'll completely ignore upper levels of benefit. So here you can see the upper levels of benefit, but here you can see as you have a decreased level of intake of a nutrient, at some point you start to have an increased risk of inadequacy. Now, inadequacy is now defined as the increased risk for a chronic illness. So, and then here at the RDA level, you want to protect 98% of that population from the increased risk of adequacy. So I tried to get as much broad data as I can. And so here is data all from on the x-axis. This is the omega-3 EPA and DHA composition from about 587 different commodities in 38 different countries across the world. And I took the nutrient contents using, unfortunately, 1995 or so estimates of nutrient content for those foods and calculated the percentage of energy from omega-3s, primarily from seafood, in each country. And then on the y-axis for each of these different disease outcomes, this is all causes of mortality before the age of 75. So premature death before the age of 75 for men, for women, stroke mortality for men, for women, and then did curve fitting to get the best dose response estimate for these six illness models of major burdens of health, also for coronary heart disease mortality in men and women, for homicide mortality. I like counting homicide as a psychiatrist because it's a reliable diagnosis across countries and across time. Even a psychiatrist can make the diagnosis correctly. And for postnatal depression, that's a wonderful story where women may become more depressed if they give over their body stores and their brain stores of omega-3s to their babies. Here's some of the early ecological data for major depression and bipolar illness. So given those 12 different curves, we can start to model this by saying here's all causes of mortality before age 75 for women. Japan and Iceland always do the best. So we'll say that we won't go beyond Icelandic intakes of omega-3s and say that's the baseline. And this area under the curve is not attributable to deficiency. And this area under the curve is potentially attributable to deficiency. So it's approximately 31% of all premature death may be attributable to a deficiency in omega-3 fatty acids. Should I repeat that? I thought it was pretty cool. So we were able to look at the Institute of Medicine's recommendations of 180 milligrams a day, and I think that doesn't protect 98% of the population. ISFAL recommendations, a lipid society, and then if we use the model of Japan, looking at about 750 milligrams a day, that protects about 98% of the population from all potentially burdens of illness. So I did that for all 12 of the disease models, and I think it's important to highlight coronary heart disease. The disease attributable was about 40%, and this was exactly the same number that Sue came up with in Harvard looking at a meta-analysis of prospective intervention trials of omega-3 fatty acids and cardiovascular disease, again indicating that 40% of this illness can be attributable to this nutritional deficiency. I'm not quite sure that I believe that 98 and 99% of these major depressive illnesses are attributable to deficiency, but that's what the data shows. And so again, it's only about 0.34% of energy or 750 in a 2,000 calorie diet that meets the criteria for adequacy. And that's so it's really we're looking at Japanese levels of intake. And not only Japanese levels of intake, it's not your intake that predicts your illness, it's what your body's made of that predicts your illness. So tissue is the issue, ultimately. So here is a typical U.S. diet at the end of the 20th century with about 85% of the essential fatty acids being arachidonic acid, an omega-6 fatty acid, and about 15% being the blue omega-3s compared to a Japanese diet. A ligand hits a receptor. There's a lot of biophysical issues of the receptor changing shape so that the new pocket can come in. And there's a process of immediate autodigestion of the membrane, which occurs in neurons, occurs in immune cells, occurs in cardiovascular epithelium, that takes the available fatty acids in the membrane that are determined by diet and releases what's available in the membrane into the COX enzymes, the lipoxygenase enzymes, and leukotrienes. If there's a boatload of arachidonic acid being dumped into the COX system, then you get correspondingly large amounts of prothrombotic and pro-inflammatory eicosanoids. Now, you can continue our approach of using about $10 billion a year or more of drugs to sort of put your finger in the dike, or you can consider what's the ultimate source of those pro-inflammatory fatty acids, which I think affect virtually every biological tissue system. Yeah, so this is ibuprofen, Cerebrex, Vioxx, aspirin, etc. If you use a diet of evolution or a diet of Japan, then you get at least about 60% of the omega-3 of the polyunsaturates in the membranes being omega-3s. Then when the membranes get digested, you get proportionally greater release of those, and you get a different complement of eicosanoids and prostaglandins produced. And this has nothing even of the case of whether or not you're stuffing your membranes with trans or with alternatively created cis fatty acids by hydrogenation. There's also a huge amount of different gene expression which occurs comparing this omega-6 diet versus the omega-3 diet occurring in the brain and in the liver. Here, clearly, there's a huge influence on SREBP1 expression and the production of triglycerides and adiposity, which are all reduced in this diet. So here is a schematic we created looking at tissue concentrations, the tissue compositions here in X, of looking at the percentage of omega-3 fatty acids in the polyunsaturate pool. So here at about 20% of your pool, here's most of the U.S. in these four of the five quintiles of Mr. Fit. And here's their cardiovascular risk. And then here's all Quebecois, Quebec Cree, Quebec Inuit, Japanese, Icelandic, and Spanish populations. And it's a pretty tight fit, and it makes a lot of biological sense that the more loaded up your body is with arachidonic acid, which so here it's about 60 or 80% arachidonic acid is the pool, and here is much less, the greater your cardiovascular risk. So I'm going to say I want to be like a Japanese old guy. I'm not quite willing to go to Greenland, but I'll be a Japanese old guy and try to lower my cardiovascular risk here. So here we have to play with things. Tissue. What's tissue composition determined by? Not only the fish you eat and the omega-3s you eat, but what are the background seed oils that you eat? Many background seed oils do contain linoleic acid, and it's elongated and desaturated very poorly into EPA and DHA. And by the way, there's new data published today in PNAS that the genetic variants of this delta-6 desaturase gene and the ability of EPA of this conversion to occur interacts with breastfeeding to determine IQ in children. So if you're not breastfeeding and not giving your baby DHA and you have a poor genetic variant, your child has significantly lower IQ. Thus its importance in brain development. You could also overwhelm this and sort of instead of genetically, if you're predisposed to poor conversion, you can load your body up with lots of linoleic acid, which also competes with the enzyme, and there you get this great amount of arachidonic acid produced, 20 carbons, 4 unsaturates, and then when they get digested, they make these pro-inflammatory leukotrienes and eicosanoids. So when you think about what your tissue is loaded up with here, you have to think about not only how much arachidonic EPA and DHA you're eating, but what's the background, especially of linoleic acid that you're eating. So here is, I like it when other people show old data, so here's old data from 1963 from Ralph Holman in rats looking at this linoleic acid here at 0.5% up to 10% in the diet. And even though they're eating the same amounts of fish, here going from 0.5% where we started at the beginning of the 20th century up to about 10% of calories, the DHA drops by more than half. And the EPA drops from more than 4% to, you know, less than 0.5%. So just by loading the diet up with linoleic acid, we've been able to lower the tissue levels of the really important omega-3 fatty acids. So in this complex slide, which is published in here, we look at the tissue target of being a Japanese old guy. Now, if you're in the Philippines and you want 60%, your background linoleic acid is 0.8% of your calories. Okay? So there's the linolenic, there's the arachidonic, which is pretty much the same across countries. So in this case, in the Philippines, you only need about 0.1 or 275 milligrams per day of EPA and DHA to get the amounts of EPA and DHA you want in your tissues. Now, say you live in Denmark, and instead of 0.8, you're up to 2%. Then you need 1,000 milligrams of EPA and DHA. Say you live in the UK and you're at about 4%, to get to that same tissue target level, you need 1.5 grams of EPA and DHA. But here in the US, where 9 or 10% of our calories come from linoleic acid, you need 3.6 grams per day of EPA and DHA to get your same tissue compositions and your same reduction in cardiovascular risk. Okay, so here we are looking at the diversity of LA across countries currently existing, 0.8, which probably better reflects evolution, up to 9%, increasing the dietary requirement of EPA and DHA more than tenfold, about 13-fold, to get the same tissue levels and the same disease risk. So dietary intakes of long-chain omega-3 fatty acids vary more than tenfold necessary to achieve Japanese tissue levels, 98% protection. This variation is due to greater background levels of linoleic acid intake, and lowering linoleic acid intakes could do lots of things and include reduce the burdens of fisheries and reduce the burden of production of EPA and DHA. Now, why is this a big deal? I tried my best to get estimates of about 387 different foods consumed in the U.S. every year from 1909 to 1999. These are not perfectly adjusted for declining nutrient contents in each of those foods, but we did the best that we could. So the big deal change from 1900 to 2000 in the U.S. diet is this. It's not so big in fats. It's not so big in carbohydrates. This is the food commodity that's changed, soybean oil. And it goes from almost non-existence in the U.S. diet in 1900 to almost 12 kilograms per person per year. Here's canola oil, and it's only 1 kilogram per person per year, and nothing else even comes close for that change in dietary intakes. So why is this a big deal? It's a big deal because about half of soybean oil is linoleic acid. It is this omega-6 fatty acid. So being a guy that likes to reduce homicide and think about things, I did a thought experiment to then say, okay, we have data that omega-3s reduce suicide, homicide, and violence. Do omega-6s potentially increase it? So here's data from the U.S. from 1950 to 2000 looking at an increase in linoleic acid in the food supply, which correlates fairly well to increased rates of homicide mortality in the U.S., but there's many things that can cause this. It's only correlational. So I looked at other countries to see if the same phenomenon was occurring, and here's data in the U.K., which has a very different increase in omega-6s from 1% here in 1961 to about 5% in 2000. The correlation coefficients are quite good, unlikely to be due to chance. And again, correlating with about a fourfold increase in the risk of homicide mortality. And then when I put the UK, this is across countries and across time at the same time, 1961 to 2000, Canada, 61 to 2000, Australia, Argentina, the US, and using curve fitting data, it increased diversity of linoleic acid across countries correlates to about a 100-fold increased risk of homicide mortality in the U.S. So conversely, when we look to see if omega-3s appear to be ecologically associated with reduced risk, yes, again, it's about a 30-fold reduction in risk looking across countries with greater seafood consumption producing less homicide. And then we've already moved on to looking directly in interventional trials. Here's an observational trial with polysubstance abusers. Those who have a history of assaults don't eat fish. Those who have no history of assaults eat much more fish. And here, in a double-blind placebo-controlled trial of violent prisoners, Bernard Gesch gave essential fatty acids plus minerals and vitamins for 6 months, 9 months, and found a 37% reduction in felony-level violence among prisoners. So I want to thank you and consider that although I'm showing you the far extreme of pathology in the brain caused by a nutritional deficiency, I think that it affects all levels of emotion. And we even have data showing that lower tissue levels of omega-3s increase neuroticism and increase disagreeableness. And I hope you found my talk agreeable.